This is Paul Davey, Yield Point Specialist for Ag Services in Warren, Minnesota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Tuesday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Whitney Pittman, along with Randy Conant and Tyler Donaldson. The USDA confirmed that dairy cattle herds in Texas and Kansas tested positive for highly pathogenic avian influenza. National Milk Producers Federation Executive Vice President for Communications and Industry Relations, Alan Birga, was quick to assure that the dairy industry is fine and there will be no impact on milk supply.
I think the big thing we need right now is a lot of reassurance and keeping this issue in perspective. This is bird transmission. There is no evidence of any cow-to-cow transmission or contagion. Birds fly. They leave their markings, and in this case, a few dairy cows got sick. Those cows have all recovered. Not a single cow has died as a result of this. And after a while, they start producing milk again. So we're not seeing disruptions to the milk supply. We're not seeing a real even crisis in animal health taking place. What we have are a few isolated cases of something that, of course, you watch closely, right? Because this is something that's new.
According to Birga, the announcement will have more impact on the dairy industry than the actual infections will.
This isn't something that you should see as having a measurable impact on milk production levels. Again, we're talking about a small number of farms, a small percentage of a herd, an illness from which the cows recover. It's certainly a concern for individual dairy farmers whose herds have been affected by this, right? Every drop counts in terms of the revenue stream and production from a cow. But as an overall industry, this isn't something that really is necessarily even going to be noticeable.
EverAg principal Mike North is not seeing much of an impact on the dairy market from the identification of HAPI dairy herds in Texas and in Kansas.
We really aren't seeing a whole lot. We've war gamed this, and as it is, if you look at the number of cows it touches in any one herd and which cows it touches, it generally tends to affect the cows that are longer in milk, maybe a little bit older, have a couple more lactations under their belt. And so, you know, at first, when we were monitoring this situation in Texas, there were people that were, you know, being very aggressive and culling very quickly because they didn't know what it was. And as it started to move from one herd to another and we had more data points, what we realized is that it moves through the herd in 10 to 14 days, typically. Cows go down in milk, and then once it's gone through the herd, it's done.
And North says once it's done, it's done. Production returns to normal.
And the milk quality returns to normal, and, you know, safety is never a problem through that entire period. So we're just kind of allowing it to work its way through the process. And now that we understand what it is, we can kind of predict what part of the country is likely to be most affected, as we've, you know, seen this same traffic pattern on the poultry side over the last several years.
Beef cattle prices are seeing historic highs this year. USDA livestock analyst Mike McConnell says Oklahoma beef cattle average prices per hundredweight reached $241 in February versus...
Prices for feeder cattle are also very strong, but they're also at historic levels. There's a lot of opportunity for cow-calf operators to market their feeder cattle and, you know, get a good return on those animals that they're taking off pasture or taking off winter wheat pasture and placing them into feedlots. Now there's good returns for it. There's also still relatively robust demand for beef in the country.
McConnell does not expect cattle herds to expand for at least another year.
We're not expecting to see the beef cycle or the cattle cycle go into an expansionary mode. You know, certainly for this year, it's probably going to be at least another year or two down the line before we see the numbers start to indicate expansion.
A section of the Francis Scott Key Bridge at Baltimore fell after a container ship struck a pillar. At least six people remain unaccounted for. Soy Transportation Coalition Executive Director Mike Steenhook says while the Port of Baltimore does not handle a lot of agriculture products, its shutdown could have larger implications.
you don't just stop at one port and then you go back to the country of destination. You make several ports of call. You'll maybe start first at New York, New Jersey. You'll go to Baltimore, then you go to Norfolk, and then to Charleston and Savannah, et cetera. So the freight that will be on these vessels will not just be destined to one particular port. You'll discharge some freight and you'll absorb some freight, and then you'll go to the next location. And so the consequences of this, obviously, Baltimore is ground zero. That's where the problem is going to be most acute, and the pain will be most severe. The impacts are going to also be extend beyond that. And so we'll see some pretty significant ripple effect, you know, throughout the broader economy.
Steenhoek says this is a reminder of the importance of prioritizing ports in the country.
I think it's a really good reminder that, you know, people a lot of times they just take ports for granted. And, you know, you can have disruptions at ports and at key shipping lanes due to weather events, due to accidents, due to attack. And so maintaining and investing in and securing our port inventory in this country, it must remain a national priority, and we certainly encourage that.
A Washburn, North Dakota farmer has accepted a plea agreement to settle allegations of crop insurance fraud. Kent Paff must pay more than $390,000 in restitution and serve 3 years of supervised release for providing false information to the risk management agency. Paff is also not eligible to receive federal farm program benefits for 5 years. In 2019, Paff falsified his soybean yields to increase his crop insurance indemnity payments. Adjusters found the yields were 4 to 5 times larger than what was reported to the crop insurance company.
The Minnesota Attorney General's office has reached a temporary injunction with Evergreen Dairy at Painesville. With this announcement, employees at 5 facilities in Stearns County and 1 in Redwood County will be paid while legal action continues. The AG's office sued the dairy farm in January for failing to pay workers and charging rent for poor quality housing. Reporting Agriculture's Business, this is the Red River Farm Network.
Tuesday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. France and other EU nations are seeking tighter restrictions on food imports from Ukraine to protect European Union agricultural markets. Discussions are ongoing for extending tariff-free access to Ukrainian goods into the EU while addressing concerns of EU farmers. The European Commission proposed extending duty suspensions on Ukrainian agricultural products until June 2025, with added controls on poultry, eggs, and sugar imports.
Terrorist attacks in Russia are important to keep an eye on, according to Cognitive Investments Director of Geopolitical Analysis Jacob Shapiro, although the war with Ukraine is still the biggest headline to keep an eye on.
It may show us that there's an underlying brittleness inside of Russia itself brewing. But that being said, I thought that with the Prigozhin incident of last year, too, and Putin was able to put things back together. So I'm not willing to say that anything that big changed as a result of the terrorist attack, but certainly it's something that we should watch for going forward. I think the bigger thing happening with Russia is in the context of the war with Ukraine. Ukraine has been successfully bombing Russian oil refining facilities with drones. It's even been hitting some Russian ships in the Black Sea. On the flip side, Russia has, I won't say turned the tide in eastern Ukraine, but it's begun to take some territory back from Ukraine in the context of its failed counteroffensive of last summer.
Europe's involvement in the conflict will be key moving forward.
And ultimately, the direction that this is going to go is going to depend not so much on the United States or even Putin. It's going to depend on Europe. If Europe decides to put on its big boy pants and support Ukraine in its war against Russia, then I think that Putin is in for a very, very difficult time and Russia's in for a difficult time. If Europe continues to dilly-dally and continues to make promises to Ukraine but doesn't fulfill them, then Putin's strategy to basically out-suffer and outweigh everybody else will probably be victorious, and he'll be able to withstand all of these different things. So that's a way of putting what's happened in the last week in perspective, but it's always constantly changing here.
NDSU Extension will host two discussions focused on grazing technologies. NDSU Associate Professor and Livestock Environmental Stewardship Specialist Miranda Meehan is excited to see what researchers and ranchers can learn from each other during the discussions.
Yeah, so I think that we know a lot, and a lot of people are using technology in the farming side of agriculture, which is a little bit more unknown, is those livestock technologies, especially those that we can use in a grazing system. And so the purpose of these discussions really highlights some of those technologies that are relatively new, and there's not a lot of people using them yet. And so we want to talk about, you know, what are the technologies, what are the pros and cons of these technologies when you're considering implementing them into your production system.
Meehan hopes the discussions will help shed light on the barriers preventing ranchers from including new technologies into their operations.
I think that's what we're hoping to learn from these discussions, part of that. I think when I look at virtual fence specifically, and maybe some of the water monitoring systems too, depending, is, you know, that upfront cost of implementation and maybe the unknowns and how they're going to implement that into their system and how it's going to work for them.
Comstock Investments market analyst Joe Camp says a lack of bullish news is allowing grains to sag lower.
Risk taken off the table here as everybody looks ahead towards this Thursday crop report day. We'll have, of course, the prospective plantings numbers out and the quarterly grain stocks update, all to close out the week, to close out the month before the long holiday weekend started with Good Friday here coming up. So it is a market that's marking time until that report.
Cattle market continues to digest last Friday's cattle on feed report.
That was on paper bearish relative to expectations, particularly that placements number that was up almost 10% from a year ago. But we're reminded about it being up from a really small number a year ago, and the fact that it's also likely implying that heifer retention is still light. And so the flip side of that is long-term, still not seeing any sign of traction for trying to rebuild this herd just yet. But for now, I think you're seeing some speculative liquidation for one, some technical stops, some of this profit taking in a hurry by the speculative crowd that had been building up a net long over the past 2 months or more.
Go to the Red River Farm Network's website, rrfn.com. Sign up for the weekly FarmNet News newsletter. You can also download this broadcast and follow us on Facebook and X. It's all at rrfn.com. You're listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. The latest edition of the University of Minnesota Extension's Strategic Farming Webinar looked at fungicides for managing specific corn and soybean diseases. University of Kentucky Extension plant pathologist Kirsten Wise says fungicides generally have little impact on stock disease on corn.
It's very hybrid dependent on standability. And so I think a fungicide, if a hybrid doesn't have good stock strength, I'm not sure a fungicide can make up for that, right? Fungicides control diseases, foliar diseases. You know, we haven't seen good efficacy at them controlling stock diseases because those are later season, usually later season type events. But what I can say is that, you know, if we're applying a fungicide and you're keeping that corn healthy, I think that's good, but I don't think that we can ask those fungicides to also keep our corn standing in a very high windstorm. I think that's maybe too much to ask and rely on them to do that.
Shorter corn may see more benefits in standability.
For short stature corn, you know, we've worked on that for, I think we've tested it now for a couple years. Looking at fungicide aspects of it, looking at disease control, comparing some application methods. And I mean, I think it's got great promise. They have very good hybrids. You know, they are easy to get across with a ground rig in our studies, and very easy to spray. So I think there's some potential there, particularly if we're thinking about standability in strong storms. I do think that's a great way to try to counteract some of the problems of the really tall hybrids.
A quick look at markets before we leave you. May wheat, Minneapolis down 12 cents at 647.5. September down 10 at 661.5. Chicago wheat 11 cents lower at 544. Kansas City down 12 and 3 quarters at 576 and 3 quarters. May corn futures down 5 and a quarter at 432.5. July corn down 5 and 3 quarters. December corn down 6 and 3 quarters at 468. May soybeans 9 cents lower at 1200 and a quarter. August soybeans down 7 cents at 1211 and a quarter. November soybeans 6 cents lower at 1192 and 3 quarters. Live cattle April futures down $3.10 at 183.10. June live cattle down $3.30 at $178.30. Feeder cattle down $5.70 at $244.75. May feeders down $5.95. This is the Red River Farm Network.